Hey, it's over. Yahoo! We can all get back to normal. It's all over. Now what? Next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And I'm actually recording this late on Thursday night, the 7th of November 2024, for the show on the 9th of November 2024. And the reason I'm recording late is somehow a bunch of my settings got changed, and I've had major difficulties getting things back to normal, at least some semblance of normal. And so there, you don't have to worry about that. I think I've got it set to the point where I can get things done that I need to get done on this program. And folks, I don't know about you, but I've been under the impression that I always forget. I'm 67 years old. I've lived through a whole bunch of these. I mean, I wore a Goldwater for President badge in 1964 when I was 7. So I've been involved in campaigns of many stripes over many years. People have accused me of being a Republican Party stalwart, and I always laugh and say, boy, you didn't hear my criticisms of Republican presidents especially Nixon, Ford. Let's see. I was critical of Reagan for a number of things, mostly the people he appointed to cabinets. I did love Reagan, and I loved the rhetoric, but he couldn't back it up. He kept appointing all these horrible people to office. I mean, Caspar Weinberger and George Shultz and all these bad players. I was very critical of George H.W. Bush because George H.W. Bush might as well have been, a Democrat. He talked like a Republican and he governed like a Democrat. And then, of course, George W. Bush, who turned out just everybody. You could not talk sense to people about, because after all, he was a believer and he was a wonderful guy. Then all of a sudden we find out he's dipped us into wars that, unwinnable wars. And by that I mean, we weren't really trying to win. We were trying to quote unquote contain. Well, containment doesn't work. And the tactics you end up using essentially create enemies around the world, which is exactly what we did under George W. Bush. We made people who may not have been completely friendly to us, we definitely made them into enemies, which didn't work out very well. So, I loved Trump the first term. I'll be quite honest. I did not vote for Trump the first time around. I voted third party. So that Republican stalwart thing goes out the window. I have voted for Democrats in the past. Why? Because I think they were better candidates than the Republican. But I am a registered Republican. I'll be right up front with you. But again, I'm not married to the Republican Party by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I've been third party. I was chairman of the Ohio Constitution Party for a couple of years. I was the secretary, and then I was the chairman. What did that consist of? Not much. I went to some of the party functions and tried to keep the platform together while those who would really wanted to make us into Republican light, and in fact, that's one of the major problems we had in third-party politics. We had people who were small fish in a big pond in the Republican Party and came over into the Constitution Party, and because they were essentially knew something about the party apparatus and how it worked and how parties were supposed to work, they were big fish in a small pond. Well, big fish in a small pond. What do? you essentially divert votes from major candidates. And we saw that in Ohio when I went in to vote, and I thought I knew a lot about what was on the ballot in Ohio. And it turns out there were three minor party candidates for president that I didn't know about. And there was one that was, quote unquote, withdrawn, which some people voted for. That was, of course, Kennedy, who came out and endorsed Trump. But of course, it was all for naught because, in Licking County, I think 60-some% went for Trump. Woohoo, it's over, except it's not. There's maneuvering going on already. I'm on a very interesting text networks. For some reason, I will not give you the person's name, but I have my phone is listed under my name, of course. Generally, I've had this phone number, my cell phone number, since I think 1999, maybe 1998, somewhere in that vicinity. It's been a while. I've had this for a long time, but I started getting mysterious calls for someone else. When I looked this person up, I kept getting these calls and I kept getting texts and all this. And I looked this person up, and sure enough, my phone number's listed under his name. Now, this was not in 1999. This is recently, like maybe the last 4 or 5 years. So something happened. His phone got listed. His phone number is probably similar to mine. A transposed number here and there, and all of a sudden you are this person. Well, apparently this fellow was active in Democratic Party politics, because I start getting these wild-eyed texts. I got one tonight. We knew that Trump was the president of the United States, the next 47, as of Wednesday. We knew that Wednesday. We really knew it Tuesday night. Now, I'm going to be right up front with you. I had people say, are you going to watch this thing, the coverage? And I'm like, oh, certainly not. There's no point in that. It gets me all worked up. And, you know, I run around and I get excited and I get disappointed and all kinds of things happen. I am a reformed person, which means that I believe in the sovereignty of God in all things. And I'd prayed about this election. I did my duty. I went out and voted in it. I campaigned for certain things and certain people. I did what I could, and sitting around and watching the results and getting all worked up is not my idea of sport. I'm not the kind of person. People have asked me this. Do you like roller coasters? I've always hated roller coasters. Have I ridden them? Oh, sure. I've ridden them. And people ask me, what'd you think? And I said, well, I still hate them. I was the kind of stick in the mud who would go to Cedar Point, and I'd ride the Space Needle, and I would play the bumper cars, and I would do any number of other things. I'd love to ride the train. I know it's boring as anything. I'm really not Mr. Excitement. And I always end up with a stiff neck when I rode. Like, for instance, I just for old time's sake and for posterity, I would ride the Blue Streak. My parents went to college in Ada, Ohio, at Ohio Northern. And Sandusky is a kind of a playground for people in Ada. It's not that far. It wasn't that far. And they would go up there and to the amusement park when they were dating, and they'd ride the Blue Streak because that was the roller coaster. That was the scary roller coaster. All I got from the Blue Streak was basically a stiff neck from going around the corners too fast. And essentially, some of those roller coasters, people were like, you going on that? And I'm like, no. I got this thing. I don't like to be terrified. And being stuck up at the top of a 200-foot hill, waiting for the thing to come down in free fall is not my idea of a good time. I don't enjoy it. So I don't do it. And that's kind of the way you feel some nights on election night. Because you're sitting there, and if the spirit of the age is not going your way, it's very disappointing. It's not quite the same as the Son of Beast or something down at Kings Island, which isn't there anymore, and there's a good reason for that. It was a combined wood and steel roller coaster, and they essentially tore it down when they figured out they couldn't really make it safe. So I never did ride that one. There are other ones I've done, and let me tell you how exciting I am when I go up to the top of the Eiffel Tower at Kings Island. I have to force myself to get out of the elevator against the inner wall. And I have to, it's everything I can do to go up to the rail and look over, because I'm deathly afraid of heights. And for no reason, I can fly no problem. I'm not afraid in a plane. I can be up 40,000 feet. I've done that. In fact, I thought it was spectacular. I remember flying someplace, and I flew, and wow, you can really, when you're up 40,000 feet, man, you can really see. I remember we went over Ohio, and I could see the lower peninsula of Michigan, a huge portion of it, because you're up so high. And did that scare me? Not in the slightest. But being in an open thing that could crash and kill me, yeah, that scares me. And sometimes election night returns scare me. So I waited, I prayed about it, and went to bed, and woke up, and when the alarm went off, I picked up my phone, I looked at the news, and I'm like, hey, looks like it was a pretty good night in Ohio and elsewhere. Was I unhappy with that? No, I wasn't. Is it over? No, of course not. This thing I started talking about with this fellow who... they have listed my phone number under his name. I'm getting all kinds of texts, and I've been getting texts for him all along during the campaign. Today I got one. Now listen to this. If you don't think there are plans being made, and really, I'm a conspiratorialist, and I do believe that you can go anywhere in history and see something that happened that's of major import to the world, and virtually every time you look at it, it's a conspiracy. Not kidding. It's not necessarily the people you think it is. None of these things are by accident, but who, and God is in control. So don't kid yourself. You know, I've always said, if you don't think that there are conspiracies, there was a 4-member conspiracy upon the death of Christ. And people are always like, no, there's no conspiracy. God gave up, Jesus gave up his life on his own. And I said, yes, but the machinations at the world, the Satan trying to kill him, think that was going to interrupt his kingdom. Was there a conspiracy? Yes. Who were the conspirators? The Romans. Okay. The Herodians. All right. The Sanhedrin, and the Zealots. Every single group in there had a reason to want Christ dead. Every one of them worked together, hand in hand, to make sure that Christ was killed. And yet, it all worked out as God had planned all along. Don't think that Christ, you have to, if you deny conspiracy, and you deny the fact that God had planned this out from before the beginning of the world, knowing full well that man would fall, and knowing full well that his son Jesus Christ would have to come and be sacrificed for our sins to cleanse the world of our sins and defeat Satan. I will lay it out for you. The Romans wanted him dead because he was a threat to their political order. The Sanhedrin wanted him dead because he was a threat to the spiritual, they thought, to the spiritual well-being of the people, and he was a threat to the peace that they had worked out in compromising with the Roman government. They had a truce. The Romans let them keep their ecclesiastical authority, and they kowtowed to the Romans. What was it that Caiaphas said? Caiaphas in John 11, verses 45 through 53. John intimates that this is a prophecy. I'll read it, and you can make your own interpretation. This is from the ESV, John 11:45 through 53. Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and Pharisees gathered the council and said, "What are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation." But one of them, Caiaphas, he was the high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. Nor do you understand that it is better for you that one man should die for the people, not that the whole nation should perish." Nor did he say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day on, they made plans to put him to death. What Caiaphas was not saying was that Jesus was the Savior of the world. What Caiaphas was saying was, we need to make sure Jesus dies so there's not a revolt that the Romans would come in and crush us. Well, what happened after Jesus' death? Essentially a revolt brewed up based around the Christians. And the Romans came in and crushed the Jews. The slaughter in Jerusalem and all of Israel in between 68 and 70 A.D. Are simply not deniable. Josephus, and it's part of the Roman record, but very, very much of it was over Jesus Christ. He was very much the center of that revolt. So basically we see that it was, again, the Romans, the Herodians, the Sanhedrin, as we've just explained with Caiaphas, and the Zealots. Why did the Zealots want him to die? The Zealots wanted him to die for precisely the opposite reason that the Sanhedrin wanted him to die. Does that make any sense? No, they wanted to create a martyr that would ignite a revolt. And that's why they were involved in the conspiracy to kill Christ. Many of them thought he was the Messiah, but they didn't understand the mechanics of his messiahship. He was not coming to be a political Messiah. He was coming to be king of politics after his resurrection, but he was coming to be the Messiah of the Jewish people, not to save them from the Romans, but to save them from their sin and from death. That's the whole point. The Zealots didn't see it that way. They didn't mind dying. They wanted to start a revolt. Barabbas, who was chosen out to be released by the Jewish people in there where when Christ was crucified. Remember, Pilate did his best to because he wanted to keep the peace, and he saw that Christ was very popular. He wanted to keep the peace, and he basically said, "I wash my hands of this. I see nothing wrong with this man." And they said, "Well, who would you have me release unto you for on this, you know, this day of Passover?" Well, who'd they ask for? Barabbas. What was Barabbas? Why was Barabbas going to be executed? Barabbas was going to be executed because he'd murdered Roman soldiers as a zealot, as a revolutionary. This is they said, "Release Barabbas to us." Now, I think there are extra biblical sources that talk about what happened to Barabbas, and there's one I wouldn't take anywhere anything like the truth. That's the movie Barabbas. There is a movie about Barabbas. It's called Barabbas, not shockingly. And it's, I think, Barabbas is played by Victor Mature. Those of us who are old movie fans know who Victor Mature is. He played in all kinds of parts like that. He played Samson in the movie Samson, and I think Samson and Delilah in the 1940s. Hedy Lamarr was Delilah. But that being said, Samson or Barabbas was a zealot. So there's a four-way conspiracy to kill Christ. All right. That you just simply cannot deny that conspiracies get things done. People get together, make treaties and plans. A lot of it is secret. Bad things happen. And yet these things are not out of the realm of God. God knows exactly that they're going to happen. He allows them to happen. And in fact, God thwarts many things that people have gotten together and conspired. I will bring to your attention Psalm 2 on that front. Psalm 2, "Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth rise up, and the rulers band together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, 'Let us break their chains and throw off their shackles.'" They're not talking about a king, not a worldly king. They're talking about the King of Kings. Let's go on. "The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. He rebukes them in anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, 'I have installed my king on Zion, my holy mountain.'" Who's the king installed in Zion on the holy mountain? It's Christ the King. So the Lord laughs and scoffs at these conspirators. Verse 7, "I will proclaim the Lord's decree. He said to me, 'You are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will break them with a rod of iron, and you will dash them to pieces like pottery. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear, and celebrate his rule with trembling. Kiss his son, or he will be angry, and your way will lead to your destruction. For his wrath can flare up in a moment. Blessed are all who take refuge in him." You see, God even talks about the fact that there are conspiracies. And those conspiracies are attempts to overthrow him. There are attempts to overthrow his son. And what does he do about it? In verse 4 and 5, "The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. He rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath." So, can you conspire against the Lord and be successful? No, you can't. And in fact, sometimes when you conspire against the Lord, you succeed in your conspiracy. But it turns out you've played into God's hands, which is exactly what happened with the death of Jesus Christ. Well, I got off on that tangent about conspiracies because I was Somehow I segued away from what I was talking about, and that is the conspiracies that are ginning up. I mean, Trump spent the last, from 2015 on, fighting people who were conspiring against him, and I'll be quite open and honest about that. My opinion on that, anyway. You may disagree, that's fine. And again, if you want to disagree, you can get hold of me at chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And tell me what you think. chairman@principledpolicy.com. Okay. So here's one of the things I got that is being ginned up. This is a text I got to this fellow who is clearly involved somewhere in Democratic Party politics. Okay. Not just Democratic Party, because there are plenty of people who aren't conspiratorial in the Democratic Party. This is the sort of the activist side. Okay, quote, "Hi, I chose you to represent your state in our Supreme Court strategy survey. It only takes 2 minutes. Supreme Court strategy survey, what does that mean? That means that they are thinking up ways to begin to expand this lawfare. If you'll recall, Donald Trump was being prosecuted for a number of things, essentially non-crimes. The so-called felony he was convicted of was not a crime when he committed it. They came up with this lame prosecution saying he falsified business records in order to get loans, despite the fact that the people who gave him the loans said, no, we were not, there was no conspiracy to violate, you know, he didn't falsify the records, and we all got our money back on those loans. We got paid on time. Now, has Trump ever declared bankruptcy? Oh, yes. And he didn't do it the way Michael Scott on The Office did it. bankruptcy, I declare bankruptcy. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's from The Office and you won't get it. No, he went into court and declared bankruptcy. And what kind of bankruptcy did he declare? He declared the type that is not a liquidation of the debt. He declared the type that is a reorganization of the debt. What does that mean? It means he had every intention of paying it off. Every intention of paying it off, not in trying to weasel out of paying it. There are several different kinds of bankruptcy, and basically there are some people that get in so deep that they have no way of ever getting out of it. Now, personally, I think that that's a negative way of looking at it. If you're good at what you do, you're good at business, very often you can dig your way out. Not necessarily in the same business, but nonetheless, you can dig your way out of debt. So this, was it a conspiracy in New York to come up with something to get him convicted of? And the answer is yes. Why? Because the left desperately wanted to use lawfare. You may have heard that term. Lawfare is abusing the law for political gain. So they created this crime, by the way, which was not a crime, was not anything but a misdemeanor, and created it into a felony after the fact. Now, just for the heck of it, I'm going to go to the U.S. Constitution and read you the section that forbids that very thing. This is from Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution. Section 10, Article 1. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Which part of that was the big deal? Ex post facto law. In Latin, ex post facto means from after the fact. What that means is that you pass a law after an act is committed and make it illegal, and then try the person for having violated the law that was not a law when they quote unquote violated it. And that's exactly what happened in the case in the New York fraud. They also committed lawfare with the case there with the woman who accused him of sexual assault, Donald Trump of sexual assault. She couldn't remember any details. She couldn't remember dates. All she knew was that it was in the dressing room of this high-class store. She couldn't remember what she was wearing. She claimed she was wearing a certain dress that had not been produced yet. When the dates, the vague dates that she came up with, were brought to the jury, it turns out that this exact scenario that she presented at trial was the plot of a television show, a drama, on one of the networks. So it's almost verbatim what happened in this thing. And Trump says, I was never near this woman. I don't know her. And I was not in this store or in a women's dressing room in this store. So essentially, Trump is not liked in New York City. Why? Because he has money. And money people are bad. New Yorkers have been trying to find a way to get Donald Trump, and they did. They created an ex post facto law, and they also may have essentially created a bill of attainder. I'm not going to go into that. A bill of attainder is a legislative finding of guilt, or a king, or a president, basically saying you're guilty of this crime, usually treason, and therefore we're taking your property and your fines, and you are now broke. And in England, in British jurisprudence, they would take away a title. You would be called a tainted. They would take away your title. They would take away your property, and essentially, you would be a very often exiled. And then sometimes, if you became politically expedient once more, you would have your attainder lifted, and they would give you back your estates. It doesn't translate well to American society, but there have been bills of attainder passed, where legislatures have basically done things like pass laws that guarantee that someone will basically lose everything. So, but in this case, it's an ex post facto law. All right. Now this fella was on streams for a number of groups. This one is from a group called, Act Blue, or Forward Blue. Forward Blue. And I believe these guys are being investigated by the Federal Election Commission for being fraudulent. They are using illegal fundraising, partly having to do with bundles, money bundling. In fact, I got a text on Wednesday, and it says Donald Trump won, an exclamation point. And it says, if you're angry, join us in the fight. Chip in $25, 500% matched. What does that mean? That means if you give 25, they'll give five times. Someone has pledged to give five times as much. So your $25 turns into $150 with the $125 match plus your 25 turns into 150. This is to protect what's left. What does that mean? Protect how? It means what they're going to protect. They're going to use lawfare. They're going to go to court, start suing the Trump administration right and left for changes that come in as a result. And are changes going to happen? Oh, sure. The Biden administration is already stepping up shipments of money and materiel to the Ukraine in anticipation of watching it slow way down and become have much more restriction put on it. Here's one that I got on Monday, November 4th, from this same bunch, Forward Blue. Final notice. All donations are 600% matched to stop Trump and boost Kamala Harris. Folks, Monday, November 4th, it's a little late in the game for that $25 or whatever. It gives a suggestion of 10. 10 equals 60. 25 equals 150. I got these all through the campaign. Here's one I got. This would have been Monday, November 4th. Again, really late in the game. This is quoting Barack Obama. Quote, "It's time to get up right now. Right now. Please rush $25 to humiliate Trump Vance and we'll 500% match." I've been getting things from them. This is the one I got repeatedly. And this actually kind of blew up in the face of the Democratic Party and their campaign tactics. Here's one I got. Robert De Niro and George Clooney are rallying for Kamala Harris. Donations are 500% matched. Rush $25. Barack Obama also said on Tuesday, October 31st, "Tuning out is not an option. Please rush $25 to humiliate Trump Vance and we'll 500% match." This is one of the things that Forward Blue was in deep trouble for, because they were bundling these donations, and doing it this way apparently is not legal. I am not an expert. Despite the fact that I was once chairman of the Ohio Constitution Party, we didn't have to worry too much about bundled about bundled donations. Believe me. We operated on mostly on the donations of the party officers, and there were like five of us, I think, five or seven. I mean, we got more votes than that. We had 75 members or something. What else did we get? Your Kamala Harris focus group invite goes unanswered. Do you support her? I got very, desperate, emails from these people. Demanding that I join a focus group and become part of the train. I thought about doing some things just to get a insight into it, but I don't want to defraud people, and that's what I would really kind of would have had to do, and I didn't want to do that, so I didn't. I did continue to receive these, and I passed them around to my family just as I kind of say, hey, the desperation continues. And I'd say, this is what they're asking for. So the idea that it's all going to end, because Trump won. Remember, folks, he doesn't take office until January the 20th. The Electoral College does not vote until January. Oh gosh, what is the date this year? January, I think. here's the way it works. November 5th, obviously, and I'll bring something up about that date if I remember it. November 5th, of course, was Election Day, and by December 11th, states issue certificates of ascertainment. There are seven of them. Immediately after the election results in your state are certified, the executive sends one of those original certificates of ascertainment to the archivist. The archivist of what? The National Archives. All right. On December the 17th, electors vote in their various states. If you didn't know that, electors don't have to make their way to D.C. They don't have to go all over the place. They have to go to the state capitol. They meet in their respective states and vote for president and vice president on separate ballots. The electors record their votes on six certificates of vote, which are paired with six remaining certificates of ascertainment. The electors sign, seal up, and certify six sets of electoral votes. A set of electoral votes consists of one certificate of ascertainment and one certificate of vote. So there you go. They make multiple copies, and each one has that in it. The certificate of ascertainment and the certificate of vote. Okay. December the 25th. Isn't that an interesting date? That's Christmas Day. in case you couldn't put that together yourself. Electoral votes must be received by the President of the Senate. Okay. And the Archivist. Again, National Archives, the President of the Senate, and the Archivist no later than the fourth Wednesday in December. That's December 25th this year. If votes are lost or delayed, the Archivist may take extraordinary measures to retrieve duplicate originals. Okay. This is all by law. That's why it's December 25th. Normally, it doesn't fall on Christmas Day. This year, it's one of those coincidences of the calendar that it happens on Christmas Day, December 25th, on or before January 3rd, 2025. The archivist transfers certificates to Congress. So the archivist, whoever it is guarding these. As the new Congress assembles, the archivist transmits set of certificates to Congress as requested. This generally happens when the Senate does not receive its set of certificates on time. The transfer occurs in late December or early January when the OFR legal staff meets with representatives of the Secretary of the Senate, the Clerk of the House, and congressional parliamentarians. Now, here's some irony for you. Who is the President of the Senate? You folks should know that. Who's the President of the Senate? This is civics, high school civics, political science 101. The President of the Senate is the sitting Vice President of the United States. So who must receive those votes? It is the current President of the Senate, who is Kamala Harris. And which means that she'll be in D.C. on Christmas Day. And she may have been planning on it anyway. Nonetheless, because, I mean, she's not been out of state government, but her home state is California. She's been out of state government now for, she was senator from California until 2017 or 2021. But in any case, this is on or before, January 6th. This is the day. The important day, January 6th, again with January 6th this time around. Remember, the last one was January 6th, and this one in 2021, it was January 6th, and in 2025, it's January 6th. Congress meets in joint session to count the electoral votes. The vice president, as president of the Senate, presides over the count and announces the results of the Electoral College vote. Could some shenanigans be tried? They could try, but it's not going to happen. Even the radicals are not that brainless, and it would be a brainless move. Okay. The president of the Senate then declares which persons, if any, have been elected president and vice president of the United States. This is where Mike Pence got into trouble, because this is called the certification of the vote. This is why many conservatives don't like Mike Pence. The certification takes place when it is certified that there were no problems with the electors, that all the electors that voted in the Electoral College were legitimate. That's part of the job of Congress, is to determine if the people who voted in the Electoral College were eligible to vote. Now, here's one of the problems that has been run into in the past, especially like 1876. Multiple slates of electors were submitted to Congress from multiple rivals for state government. I believe the state of Oregon and the state of Louisiana, I'm really going off memory here, submitted multiple electors. This is why 1876 is called the stolen election, because what did it do? It set up a scenario where Congress had to intervene. Why? Because the electors sent in were some. You can't send two slates from one state. It's one. And then Congress has to get involved. And when it was all said and done, there was a tie vote. And Congress had to decide who was going to be president. And I think the two candidates were Benjamin Harrison. Is that right? Yeah, Benjamin Harrison and Samuel J. Tilden. And strictly speaking, Tilden probably won the election. I won't go any further into that, but I can tell you that this was called the stolen election. This is part of the deal that was made, was that if certain slates were accepted, then Reconstruction in the South would be brought to an end. And sure enough, Rutherford B. Hayes. I said Benjamin Harrison. It was Rutherford B. Hayes. My apologies. And Rutherford B. Hayes was an Ohio boy. Something important about Benjamin Harrison, and I'll see if I can remember to bring it up. But Rutherford B. Hayes essentially withdrew the occupying troops out of the South in 1877 due to this deal that was made that put him in the presidency. So things like that can happen. It doesn't. There are no multiple slates being anticipated in this. It's not even close to this was a landslide Electoral College victory. It was a landslide popular victory. Unlike Trump's first time in 16, he did win the popular vote, and he did win the Electoral College vote. Hillary won the popular vote in 16, but she lost the Electoral College vote. Okay. If any objections to the electoral votes are made, they must be submitted in writing and be signed by at least 1/5 of the members of the House and 1/5 of the senators. So that would be 87 congressmen and 20 senators would have to submit in writing. If objections are presented, the House and the Senate withdraw to their respective chambers to consider the merits of the objections under procedures set out in federal law. Only two grounds for objection are acceptable, that the electors of the state were not lawfully certified, and we just talked about that, under a certificate of ascertainment, or that the vote of one or more electors had not been regularly given. If no presidential candidate wins at least 270 electoral votes, the majority of 538 available votes, under the 12th Amendment to the Constitution, the House of Representatives decides the presidential election. If necessary, the House would elect the president by majority vote, choosing from among the three candidates who received the greatest number of electoral votes. Generally, that's going to be two. But in the old days, before the 12th Amendment, there could be multiple candidates that received electoral votes, and it happened several times. The vote would be taken by state. So, if it goes to the House of Representatives, each state gets one vote. The maximum number of votes that a presidential candidate can receive in the House of Representatives is 50. The District of Columbia does not vote because it doesn't have voting members in the House of Representatives. That's very interesting. They have three electors that vote in the Electoral College, but no vote in a tie election. I will guarantee you that if that were to become a scenario, and who knows, I might live long enough to see that, you would see a Supreme Court lawsuit instantly. The Supreme Court, there's nothing they can do. The law is pretty clear. D.C. does not have representation in Congress. That's actually not true. They have 535 representatives in Congress. 435 congressmen, 100 senators. They are all representatives of the District of Columbia, all of them, because that is a district that is to be run by the federal government. The fact that they have a city government is simply there because the Senate and House didn't want to deal with it, and they let them elect their own city leadership. That's why that happens. Constitutionally, the District of Columbia is run by the Congress. If no vice presidential candidate wins at least 270 electoral votes, under the 12th Amendment, the Senate elects the vice president. If necessary, the Senate would elect the vice president by majority vote, choosing between the two candidates who received the greatest number of electoral votes. Each senator would have one vote. So the Senate would have to choose. And it's very interesting that the Senate would choose, because why is that? Because whoever they choose to be the vice president would also be president of the Senate. So that's why that goes on. I could go into further detail. I don't have time. And then January 20th, 2025 at noon. And that is a Monday. President-elect and vice president-elect take the oath of office and become the president of the United States and the vice president of the United States, respectively. So there you have it. That's the mechanism. We were talking about lawfare cases, and we got down to the New York case. There's a case in Georgia, the Fannie Willis, who has essentially been in deep trouble for defrauding the state, defrauding her county. She's a county prosecutor in Fulton County, and she was falsely accusing Trump of election interference down there for basically questioning, I think, obviously, major election irregularities, and trying to get the governor down there, Kemp, who's a rhino, much like our Mike DeWine, who, by the way, gets to fill J.D. Vance's seat when Vance becomes vice president. That should be a nightmare, to be quite honest. It'll be a nightmare. He'll pick the worst possible case. But Trump tried to get Kent to not certify the slate, and Fannie Willis took it upon herself to charge him with election fraud. And in so doing, it took on a conspiratorial air, because it's turning out, after people doing Freedom of Information Act and filing for documents that Fannie Willis and company would not come up with, it turns out that she had meetings with the Federal Department of Justice, who advised her on how to help run this lawfare case. It's really kind of an ugly conspiracy to essentially attempt to get Trump. And then the final case was a special prosecutor was appointed by the Department of Justice, who, again, was conspiring with Georgia to try to get Trump convicted of something having to do with the conspiracy to interfere with the election. A guy named by the name of Jack Smith filed lawfare cases having to do with some documents that Trump had at Mar-a-Lago, which he was perfectly permitted to do because they said he had illegally classified documents, which he declassified before he took them, which is part of the whole problem. He did declassify those documents, and also that he was involved in conspiracies to make sure that this election was not certified. He did ask Mike Pence not to certify, but to send it back to the states, which Mike Pence went apoplectic. And then, of course, there was a riot at, not an insurrection, a riot at the Congress, which I find rather unfortunate. And I see enough conspiracy involved in ginning it up. There are all kinds of irregularities about how that happened. Nonetheless, these people were guilty of riot, not of insurrection. And in any case, all those things that Jack Smith was doing are dropped. They're using the 2024 election outcome as justification. Why? Once he's elected, he's going to clean house and he's going to come in. The objective was to get him convicted before the election, which obviously didn't work out, so that he could not be certified. That did not work out. Why did it not work out? Because judges took a look at the case, saw the bogus nature of some of the evidence, and said, no way, we are not doing this. We're not going to allow this to happen. So they slowed the train down. Fani Willis is probably going to lose her job and is probably may find herself disbarred. One of her investigators who engaged in fraud as well will probably be disbarred if not prosecuted. That's all to be determined. Will major changes happen? Oh, people in the FBI and the Department of Justice are in a panic because they know that many of them are about to lose their jobs. Why? Because they were involved in not in attempting to find fact in an investigative case, but because they were attempting to gin up evidence to falsely convict a former president of the United States of election fraud, among other things, not just election fraud. Also, I would look to the fact that some of these people who were involved in the January 6th riots have been sitting in prison for some of them approaching 4 years without trial, and some of them have died. Some of them have been physically injured permanently. One person lost an eye, I believe, from not giving proper medical treatment and sitting in a jail in D.C. awaiting federal charges of insurrection when in fact a local charge of riot would have had them serve jail time and pay a fine most likely. So are there problems? There are major problems and things are going to get very interesting. So what do we do now? Ladies and gentlemen, be in prayer because, A, if you think Donald Trump's going to be the savior of the United States of America, he's not. Donald Trump is our reprieve from God, from falling into the cesspool of ungodly political behavior. I'm not saying that Trump and Vance are overly religious. They did embrace us. They also abandoned us on, for instance, the life issue. So that being said, watch for the J6 cases to go away. Watch for the Georgia case to go away. Watch for, of course, we've already seen that the DOJ's case is going away. And watch for heads to roll when Trump and big resignations before Trump comes into office. All right. Now, one real quick. I said something about Benjamin Harrison. Donald Trump is not, some people are saying, they don't know what they're talking about. Some people are saying that Trump's the first one to have a split term. He was 45. He was president 45 and will be 47 if he's allowed to get there. And that's another issue. But the fact is, done before, and Grover Cleveland had his term split by Benjamin Harrison. That's where Benjamin Harrison's name came from. Grover Cleveland also served two separated terms. All right, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com, which isn't working, so I would ask you if you want to get a hold of me, and I can send you copies of this if you want to hear it again. I'll make them available. If you want to get a hold of me, it's chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.